So, as first of all, thanks a lot for inviting me. And as you see, I'm going to speak about a very, very speculative thing about superluminal scalar fields in cosmology. And my talk is based on a work which was done in collaboration with Slava Mohanov and Yevgeny Babichev. So, first of all, what is the plan of my talk? Roughly speaking, it has three main parts. So first of all, this is general formalism. Then I will describe how it is possible to have superluminal propagation. And then the next part will be an example of a cosmological system where the superluminal propagation is important. Namely, it is an inflationary model with large gravitational fields producing in inflation. And then the second part will be the description of such superluminal field in the neighborhood of black hole. After that, I will briefly discuss relative stability, and then I will conclude. So, first of all, what is the motivation for doing such strange things? So, we know that usually for linear theories, it is impossible to change the causal structure. So because if you consider linear equations of motion, then the metric is given, and it is normally the usual metric which stands in the Einstein equations. So therefore, the only way to break this without introducing a fixed new metric, new tensor, and violating in that sense the Einstein equivalence principle, is to introduce non-standard or non-quadratic kinetic terms. And in fact, these terms are quite common in many effective field theories, and maybe a classical example of such theories is Born-Infeld Lagrange. The next thing is more phenomenological. So non-standard kinetic terms are quite interesting for cosmology. They have fringe dynamics, and one can have, for example, this one of the main examples is inflation even without the potential, but with some speed which is much less than one, and this is the so-called k-inflation. Another example is almost the same model applied to late time acceleration of the universe, which is now quintessence with also sound speed much less than one, and with a solution of coincidence problem. So we can start from almost any initial conditions and derive to all this nice tracking behavior. So all these models were, and as well as usual Born-Infeld model, were done in the case when the sound speed or the speed of propagation is always less than one. So the quite reasonable question is, what happens if the sound speed is larger than one? And this question I am going to address in my talk.
Yeah. Don't you have one less reason to consider inflation if you are superluminal propagation? You don't have the horizon problem.
No. The point is, well, first of all, if you have the sound speed larger than one, so even if it happens, okay, then you cannot have really very large sound speeds, just because in that case you will violate copy bound gravitational wave production. Secondly, it will not help to solve the initial value problem. So it's only part of inflationary achievements. So first of all, let's consider general formalism of such nonlinear scalar fields. So I'm going to consider a system which is given by the generally covariant and Lorentz invariant action, where I introduce this notation as x, which is just the usual kinetic term. Here it's important that I'm using this signature, plus, minus, minus, minus. So then let's consider the energy momentum tensor of this theory, and it's given by this formula. We can see that the null energy condition satisfied if the derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to the kinetic term is non-negative. So why I'm writing P instead of L here? The reason is very simple. Because if x is greater than zero, or even zero, then the system is formally equivalent to some hydrodynamics with the pressure, which is given by this Lagrangian, energy density, which is given by this formula, which is in fact the usual Legendre transform, if you consider instead of derivatives in x, derivatives in phi dot. Then we can introduce four velocity, and one can also introduce the sound speed of perturbations. And if the theory doesn't depend on phi, then this sound speed square is just the usual formula of the derivative of pressure with respect to the energy density. So this analogy is quite useful in order to develop the intuition for this. Also, the notation is quite reasonable in that sense. So if you are speaking about such nonlinear models, then we should be sure that, you know, they make some sense at least. So first of all, let's consider what is the equation of motion for such field. What we will see is the following thing. This equation looks like it's almost like the same equation that we have in the usual Klein-Gordon case for the linear theory, with two exceptions. First of all, this function here, and secondly, this metric, which is staying before the second derivative, has this rather complicated form and depends on field phi and derivatives of field phi. So exactly due to this new induced structure, the superluminal propagation can be possible in such theories. So if we consider such equations, then and we write even that it is the equation of motion, then it's very reasonable to ask, well, if it is equation of motion, then it should have a reasonable Cauchy problem formulation, or initial data formulation. So, and in fact, one can address this question only if the following inequality is satisfied. Note that this equation is generally covariant as well as this equation. So that's why the whole consideration is just Lorentz invariant and generally covariant. But the initial data should satisfy this as well as, you know, the whole evolution, so to say. So this condition was derived in just recently in the general case in these two papers, but after that I realized that it was derived even earlier. In the case when x is positive, this condition reduces to the normal hydrodynamical criteria of stability that the sound speed should be real. So now let's look how it is possible to have superluminality inside generally covariant theory. So of course, if you have an equation which is just, you know, very similar to the Klein-Gordon equation, and this equation is in fact quasi linear, so linear in highest derivatives, then we can consider the characteristics, and we can consider the characteristic cone of influence, which corresponds to the normal light cone for linear series. So in fact, this characteristic cone is given by this equation, where these two vectors are, as one can see, null vectors with respect to this metric. And this metric is in fact the inverse metric to the metric which we have in the equation of motion. And this inverse metric is given by this formula. And what we can see is that if we take the null vector with respect to the usual gravitational metric and build the product, this invariant, then we can see that if the second derivative is this relation is negative, then this null vector of the normal gravitational metric is time-like with respect to this induced metric. So we can see that these null vectors for our scalar field, space-time, are space-like in the usual gravitational metric. So in fact, we have superluminal propagation.
So just a question. If you look at bimetric theories, such as ones in...
Yeah, it's one example of this.
They're very similar.
Yeah, of course.
Because you always have a scalar field connected to metrics, and the equation of motion is exactly like this.
Yeah, of course, it's very, very, very similar thing. The only difference is with bimetric theories is that, you know, in B-metric series, you usually need to postulate, you know, this new metric. And here is this dynamical structure which arises dynamically and naturally somehow. You know, if you take, for example, if you take just normal Minkowski vacuum, okay, just really empty space, in that case, the small fluctuations around this flat space will propagate with exactly the speed of light. I mean, small fluctuations of this field phi. So this metric provides us a structure to break Lorentz symmetry dynamically. That's the difference with this B-metric gravities.
Well, it's the opposite, because you have the metric for the Ricci and the metric for matter. And then you actually end up with a metric for the scalar field. So you have three metrics. The third one is actually imposed by the other two. So in a way, you can actually derive your Lagrangian from the structure of my metric theory.
Yeah, I think it should be well possible. Maybe we should discuss this later, because you know I'm not really very familiar with B-metric series. I know that they exist and I know some features. Good. After that, what we can see is that exactly if you have these conditions, then in hydrodynamical language, of course, if x is positive, so if we have time-like derivatives of this field, then we have superluminality. So the sound speed is greater than 1. So after that, the normal equation is, if you see something, you know, which is called superluminal, the first association is, well, it should violate causality. So in fact, it is not the case, because we consider these two light cones. And of course, to say that such theory is non-causal is equivalent to say that, you know, the normal wave equation is not causal. This is not the case. Modulus global properties. And we know that even in GR, so we have closed time like curve solution, and we cannot, you know, just kill them. We need to apply chronology protection conjecture. And in fact, it is conjecture. So I cannot, so at least I do not know any proof. If you know, so tell me. And that's why the situation is completely similar to that what we have in the general relativity. So we have local causality, global causality, we cannot guarantee it is a background-dependent equation. So let's consider, for example, in order to develop intuition, let's consider Friedman universe. And the cosmological scalar field, so this scalar field just depends on the time t. I'm going to consider flat Friedman universe. And now let's calculate the effective line element. So line element associated with this induced metric. So if we plug in all these fields and derivatives and so on, then we will arrive to just the same, after the time redefinition, to the same Friedman universe. Okay, and of course we know the Friedman universe does not have any causality pathology and so on. So the theory is completely causal.
The problem of causality is not that the existence of time of closed time like yours only. It's just that I can make a boost, and if you travel superluminal, I can send the messages before I receive it.
You cannot, because this would correspond to the closed time like curves. That's exactly the point.
Sorry.
Wait, if you can send information in your own past, that means that you have closed curves in your space.
Not in my own past. I'm saying that I send a message to you.
Let's exactly.
Say, and for another observer, which is boosted with respect to us, he see you receiving the message before I send it.
Yeah, well, but it just means that, you know, they have wrong clock synchronization. Nothing else.
Causality is also this, that the cause comes before the effect. So in this
well,
case,
you cannot
got a class of observer or boosted observers that mm-hmm. see the effect coming before the cause.
Yeah, sure.
Is a cause in this sense.
In a restricted sense, you're of course right. Because, for example, if you take the classical book of Hawking and Ellis, we can read the following sentence. The series which allows the superluminal propagation should be considered as unphysical because they violate causality in exactly that sense what you mean. However, the more general notion of causality, if you consider, for example, the book, the Volt book, okay, and we consider what is the causality in this more mathematical sense, then we can read the following definition. So a space-time is a-causal if closed time like curves exist. If not, that this space-time is causal. It's another question what an observer sees. Of course, it's very strange, but you should not forget about the following things. If you have this dynamical background, the theory, which corresponds to small signals, okay, if you consider small perturbations in this background, is no more Lorentz invariant. And therefore, it is a huge question whether you should apply the Lorentz transformations. You know, after that, your Lorentz transformation is not a symmetry of the system anymore. And even worse, it is just bad coordinate transformation, what people do.
Yeah, and I think the issue of a causal is even if you kill your own grandmother.
Yeah, exactly. It is just two notions. So, sorry for interrupting. It's just two notions. So if you consider that it is very strange that you are, in a very bad coordinate frame, and you see something strange, but you cannot affect this,
Right. But just so I understand, so regardless of what people call it, in your theory, there is an observer where he shoots a book at you, and you say, I think you said that before he shot a book at you. Is that right?
Yeah, it may happen, but it's a question of observation. For example, I can send information to you, okay, and then you can send this information to me back, okay, and I send something in just 5 minutes for 12, okay, and after that you send me a signal back, and it is written in your signal that you received this information in the past half 11, okay, but I will receive your signal later. In times, it just means that we use wrong time synchronization, so we use different clocks,
But I would also not be able to explain your how in terms of him sending book to you. I'd have to say that was somehow some other description.
Yeah, but
if
you
say,
you can just.
But you could say, well, that's your problem.
That's the problem of this observer. Look. You should use proper clocks. You should synchronize your clocks with the fastest signals. It should happen in your theory.
But I think there is an extra issue. She's killing your grandmother is not necessarily equal time like her, I think.
Well, I think it is. So, well, let's discuss this later, but I would say that the main point here. So, the existence of closed time recurs. So, really problems with causality, okay, in the normal GR sense.
But you have no problem with micro causality. I mean, you create.
Now, micro causality is fine here. The problem is here that there are some complicated backgrounds where you can violate the causality in the sense that you can have closed time recurves. So, for physically interesting backgrounds, so the backgrounds which I'm going to speak about, there's no violation of causality. Okay.
Okay, maybe we can hold these side discussions until later. So
we can discuss. Yeah, I think we can discuss the violations of causality so without any restriction in time after that. So let's consider what can happen in such theories and what happens with Cauchy problem and so on. So in fact, what we have is the following thing. So what is the problem for such theories? Not all initial data are allowed for well-posed Cauchy problem. So first of all, what we need to satisfy this hyperbolicity condition. Because if our data do not satisfy this hyperbolicity condition, then we cannot have Cauchy problem. But there is this thing is quite reasonable, and it is very similar to the normal Born-Enfield case. Because if you take wrong initial data, our Lagrangian with this curve will be imaginary, and we are run out from the region of validity of this model.
Do you preserve that condition by any proof you preserve?
That's an interesting question. So I tried to figure out it, but I don't know. Fairly speaking, I don't know. So at least in our cases, we can. What I think it may be also background dependent question. So one should check what happens on every solution and so on. So but the next more subtle thing is the following. So if you consider this effective metric, in fact it depends on our initial condition. Okay? Let's take a Cauchy hypersurface. Or some hypersurface which is space-like in normal gravitational metric. After that, let's take some initial data for this field phi. And for the field phi derivative. After that, we can calculate in every point how this effective metric looks like. So, of course, here it is just normal because this, surface sigma is space-like in accordance to this new induced metric too. But here we can have such pathology where this hypersurface is not space-like but time-like in this new induced metric. And of course, this will cause troubles with Cauchy data. So therefore, one can have this, one should satisfy, in fact, this restriction. And this restriction is, of course, not, so to say, Lorentz invariant, because we have superimposed this surface, and this is just the geometrical facts about, you know, projection of these derivatives of this field and so on this surface. Okay? So, in fact, so the healthy initial data should satisfy this. And here it is worthwhile noting the following things. So, if you consider this theory as an effective field theory, effective in the sense that we want to have the all Lorentz invariant terms in our Lagrangian, which are nonlinear, small. Okay? In that case, one can see that exactly this condition will be satisfied if these special derivatives of field phi are smaller than the cutoff of our theory of these characteristic nonlinearity lengths. Okay, now let's consider a particular example. So let's consider very simple inflation, so to say, with the sound speed larger than 1. So we are going to consider a critical universe with small perturbations. I mean, it's flat universe, so then we can kill vectors because they're dying as inverse square of scale factor. This is a normal notation, and let's consider this in longitudinal conformal Newtonian gauge. After that, let's concentrate on the class of following Lagrangians, so where we can separate the nonlinear kinetic terms and the dependent on phi potential. Then we can have this energy density, and this is our equation of mode for the homogeneous mode. So after that, of course, we can apply the slow prescription for this equation of motion, and it is just as usual. We can kill the kinetic contribution to the energy density, and we can forget about the second derivative. So if this happens for this regime happens for quite a long period of time, namely for, well, it depends on how, you know, conservative you are, for the amount of e-folds longer than 60 or 75, it depends, then we have, so to say, almost successful slow-roll inflation. By the way, if you allow every possible kinetic term, then we can have even the divergent sound speed. So sound speed can be as large or as small as we want. And what is very important is that this sound speed becomes an additional free parameter of the inflationary theory. And the crucial thing is here that the amplitude depends on the sound speed during the slow roll regime. So, let's consider.
Excuse me. Very silly question coming back to this original question of what is the modulation for inflation as well. I mean, certainly you can just prove that you have inflation, but depending on basically how much time quotation marks going on before you have inflation, you might now oversolve the problem because you have a supernumerary sound speed. So you might get even larger homogeneity than is observed, right?
No, well, you will produce this in homogeneities in the quantum during the exact quantum processes.
Yes.
And that's exactly what I'm going to speak about.
You can never oversolve it.
So that's exactly.
Well, the degree of homogeneity could be larger than this.
So, yeah, first thing we have homogeneity, and presumably is that just the ultimate fluctuation.
Yeah, yeah. So,
if you make a bigger patch, then we can see nowadays.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a concrete, you know, example. So I'm going to concentrate on the following Lagrangian. We can see that, you know, this kinetic term is almost like the usual Born-Infeld Lagrangian. The only exception. If you take this alpha square negative, then it will be the normal Born-Infeld Lagrangian. In our case, it is positive, and therefore, as we can calculate, the sound speed is always larger than 1, okay, for the cosmological context. So after that, we are going to have this slow roll regime and consider the equations in this oversimplified form, and one can find a solution which is in fact an attractor solution. I will show this later. And this solution is given in fact space in accordance with this formula. In fact, if you take this C star equal to 1, then it is the normal attractor in the normal m squared phi squared inflation. So in fact, this C star is the sound speed on this slow roll regime. And it is a constant, which is given by this expression. Of course, the solution exists only if we can satisfy the following inequality. So it's not a fine-tuning of parameters, however, it's restriction on parameters. So after that, we can consider what happens with this important hydrodynamical quantities, so pressure, energy, equation of state. We can find that that inflation ends. So approximately, roughly speaking, if W, so the equation of state parameter, is equal to 0, in this approximation, we will find that the end of inflation corresponds to this value of field phi. After that, we can calculate the number of defaults. So everything is straightforward. And in fact, all formulas are just the same as the normal m squared phi squared inflation. The only exception, in some places, we have this C star. So now let's consider the phase diagram in order to see that, chicken here. So in fact, here is our attractor solution, which is given by this formula in infinity in field phi. Here we have the end of inflation, and here is just numerical parameters to check. I should not forget about this, what they have taken here. So of course, it is just the same diagram what we have for the usual quotient inflation n squared phi squared. So the only difference is that it is just a little bit higher than in the normal case.
Don't you get large non-Gaussian?
I think one can have only small non-Gaussian. Because as far as I remember, if you consider, so for example, there was this recent paper by Kashmirov, so the smaller sound speed is the larger non-Gaussian to sound. So in fact, we have larger sound speeds there for the. I would expect that none of those angles are smaller. So now let's consider perturbations. And as it's a normal procedure, so we have this canonical variable. After that, we can rewrite the action for perturbations in this way. After that, this canonical variable is subject for canonical quantization. We can calculate two-point functions. And after that, we will arrive to the following power spectra. Namely, for this expression, it's a general result for every single field theory. And this is for the scalar perturbations, and this is for the tensor perturbation, for gravitational waves. So let's assume that CS is a order 1, so it is not 1,000. Okay? In that case, the sound horizon and the normal, so sound Hubble horizon, shouldn't say, and the normal Hubble horizon are almost the same, so we can skip this. And after that, we will arrive to the following formula. So in fact, the main result is that the scalar, tensor to scalar ratio is given by this formula, so it is the same one as in Weiss bound, with only exception we modify this with the CS. Okay? And you can see what happened. Well, so, and here in our case, if we consider the scalar index, then it gets modified by this factor in general, but in our case, for this m squared phi squared potential, the sound speed on the slow roll is not time dependent. That's why this term can be thrown away. And what we finally have, just the same observational consequences for this inflation, like in usual m squared phi squared inflation. Namely, we have the same tensor index, we have the same scalar index, we have the same mass of this field, and we have arbitrary large amount of gravitational waves from inflation. Of course, we can satisfy Pauli bound, so it depends on our parameter alpha, which is just parameter of nonlinearities. So, in fact, alpha should satisfy this. If you come back to normal units, alpha should satisfy this inequality, and this means, in fact, that if you consider that this ratio is just 10 minus 7, so just 10 minus 14, so alpha is much less than Planck scale, or can be less than Planck scale. So now, another part of my talk is about the following equation. So what happens with black holes if information can propagate faster than light? You know, the normal equations which people usually address in such series, where in bigotic series, for example, and so on. So how one can look at this? Of course, we know that there is no Hare theory, and our model doesn't violate null energy condition. Therefore, if you want to look on such models around black hole, it is impossible to have normal static solutions, so something like halos of this stuff and so on. However, one can consider stationary spherically symmetric accretion. You know, in that case, we do not violate any null Hare theorems. And what we are going to do, we take the same kinetic term as in the previous model, and then we consider this spherically symmetric stationary accretion onto a black hole, namely Schwarzschild black hole. And we take this as a, as a usual accretion approximation without back reaction. So this is just a test fluid. We do not change the geometry of black hole. So it is reasonable that if something can propagate faster than light, then we should consider the geometry also inside of the Schwarzschild horizon. So in order to do this, it is very reasonable to use the Finkelstein Eddington coordinates, which are non-singular on the horizon. And after that, we are looking for a particular solution of this very simple equation of motion. And in fact, it is not so complicated to find an exact solution for this case. So I am not going to concentrate on all details, but the main important thing, so first of all, one can use the following concepts. It is just because of the assumption of stationarity of this accreting hole. And after that, we should solve an ordinary differential equation of the second order for this function f of r. So we have assumed boundary conditions, which are just Minkowski spacetime and at infinity with finite energy density of this accreting fluid. So after that, one can arrive in terms of for example, four velocity or r component of four velocity of the sound speed, it doesn't matter, to the following simple result, where we have two integration constants. Namely, one of them is the sound speed at infinity, and another one is the constant A, which fixes the flux of this fluid. And of course, it is reasonable to expect that this accretion should depend on the conditions at infinity. However, this constant A should be fixed because we know that the solution of this accretion problem should be unique. So how one can do this? Because we have, exact family of solutions. In fact, one can do this in two ways. So the first way would be, as we did this in our paper, just to consider all the solutions, then consider how the small perturbations propagate on these different backgrounds, and then figure out where is this sound horizon. And we know that no fluctuations can escape this horizon. Therefore, if any troubles happen with this solution inside of this horizon, we should not take care about it, because they are unphysical, they will not arrive to us. Okay? However, if something bad happens with the solution outside of the sound horizon, then it is, of course, bad, because this means that this solution is unphysical. So it is either unstable or, imaginary for this some values of this constant and so on. And it's quite easy to compare these solutions with the sound horizon and so on. And after that, so it's, one should mention that there is something like cosmic censorship. So if you have singularity, if you have something better now in the behavior of the solution, it should be inside of the horizon. Okay, so it's something like cosmic censorship for this acoustic black hole. So after that, one can write the following expression, namely that this constant is just the 1 over sound speed at infinity cube, and the solution can be found only for these values of the sound speed at infinity, so they are really superluminal, however, not so very superluminal, so to say. So I think this is a feature of the model. So one can calculate also the sound speed at the sound horizon. And after that, one can calculate the accretion rate in order to verify that our adiabatic approximation and that our assumption that the geometry doesn't change a lot is valid. And in fact, we can see that the sound speed can be arbitrary, but we can change our constant of non-linearity parameter in order to make this accretion rate as small as possible. So this would verify our assumption about adiabaticity. So that's our solutions. This is how sound speed behaves. This is how the energy density behaves. And this is the normal Schwarzschild horizon. And this is the sound horizon. So another interesting thing is, let's consider this plot in Finkelstein-Eddington coordinates and see what is the causal structure of this, of this background. So blue cones correspond to the normal light cones, and red cones correspond to our solution, to our, Ks and so on. This mysterious, superluminal field. What we can see, so, and here, by the way, this is the trajectory which corresponds to, just coordinates which are forming in onto black hole together with this fluid, with this scalar field. And this red line is an acoustic signal made of from this small perturbations of this fluid. And what we can see is this is the usual Schwarzschild horizon. It cannot send any normal signals from inside of this point of this line. However, of course, we can send these red signals of this Ks and so on, this nonlinear field. And after that, we arrive to acoustic horizon. And from this region, it's impossible to send anything. So it's real acoustic horizon. In fact, what we have is just this Unruh dump hole. Because it is an acoustic black hole, and we used the Schwarzschild geometry in order to generate this, to use this as Huber, as the source for this hydrodynamics, It's just a source that generates our solution. So after that, should I repeat this? So I have a transparency about the normal, causality paradoxes. If you send a signal here, then you are in a boosted reference frame. You can send signal back in time. And after that, of course, it is a paradox. So let's see whether it happens here. So for the cosmological context, it cannot happen just because you have these characteristics, these red characteristics, and you have a preferred reference frame. Therefore, you can consider everything in this reference frame because your theory is generally covariant. Therefore, everything is geometrical. Thus, if somebody sends a signal here to this rocket can respond only in future, in this time. Because this will be the direction of propagation in this reference frame, which is preferred. So moreover, one can formally prove that causality is preserved in both cases under consideration. So formally, I showed that in the case of Friedman universe, we arrived to just the same metric. Therefore, there are no causality paradoxes. In that case, in the case of black hole, the proof is also very, very, very easy. Our full velocity is normal time-y vector, defined everywhere and non-vanishing everywhere outside of the sound horizon. Therefore, in accordance to the theory, I cannot remember the number, from volt, this space-time, which is given by this acoustic or induced metric, is stably causal. So there is no causality paradoxes in this background of accreting Friedman to black hole. So another thing about black hole is the following. There are claims that, you know, such superluminality can lead to the violations of the second law of thermodynamics. So now let's think about this. So if you have this Unruh dump hole, okay, we know that if we have acoustic horizons, then, and we have spherically symmetric netting, then it's very, very easy to calculate the Hawking temperature. Just using Euclidean methods of field theory, expand the metric around the horizon, we will arrive to Rinka spacetime, or just using the normal Euclidean methods, you can see that in order to kill this cone singularity, we need to impose it. The Hawking temperature is in fact given by this formula where K is surface gravity associated with our induced metric. And after that, one arrives to the following formula. And you see that the Hawking temperature of these photons, of these acoustic perturbations, is less than the normal Hawking temperature. However, there is no violation of the second law of thermodynamics because our system is not closed. So we have constant flux of energy from infinity. Okay, therefore, even the possibility to transmit energy from these pieces of particles, from these photons, to the Horta particles, which are normal Hawking radiation particles, doesn't violate anything because, you know, we have engine which is staying at infinity, so to say. You know, it's like a fridge. And of course, we know this fridge doesn't violate the second law of thermodynamics. So another interesting thing is that everything what I have written about this theory is also valid for the case when we have the same Born introduction, but with negative alpha squared. So if we have the Born infield field which is not superluminal, okay, which is normal, that Born infield which the people consider in string theory, for example, okay, so every formula holds, and in fact we will arrive to the same conclusion that the Hawking temperature of these acoustic photons is less than the Hawking temperature of the normal particles. So because you can see the formula doesn't depend on on whether this C at infinity is larger or smaller than 1. And it is a nice property of this Born infield Lagrangian. So it is an additional symmetry. In fact, it's a very exceptional case in all these nonlinear series. So I think I'm going to conclude. So my conclusion is, if such theories exist, okay, then one can send information faster than light. So one can have inflation with large gravitational waves. And the same scalar index, tensor index, and the mass of inponton. So on the level of 2 days observations, such theory cannot be, distinguished from the usual n squared phi squared inflation. So Schwarzschild horizon changes its universal meaning. Here it's important to note that we do not violate null energy condition. Therefore, every statement about the thermodynamics of black hole holds. Okay? So the area of the horizon of a black hole corresponds to entropy. So one can have really different Hawking temperatures, and it doesn't depend on whether we have superluminal case, subluminal. So if you have nonlinear theory, you have different causal structure for this theory, you have different Hawking temperature. So causality is preserved in both cases which are presented here. And of course, there are nevertheless some backgrounds where causality is violated. However, this is somehow similar to that what we have in GR. So in GR, it is also possible to have quite normal, quite physical situations where the causality is violated. So the only way out from this is chronology protection conjecture. So another point which is worthwhile mentioning here, so it's, of course, if we consider this quantum mechanically or quantum field theoretical problems, so of course, if you consider only small fluctuations around this background, around this classical background, then what we have is just the normal, and we take preferred reference frame in order to simplify everything. Then what we have is the normal quantum field theory with a different, you know, some with different speed of light, so to say. Okay, but we do know that if you consider some phonons or magnons or whatever in condensed matter physics, there are no problems with quantization. Okay, therefore, if you consider only small fluctuations, then you know just normal quantum field theory. If you want to quantize them, of course. However, if you want to consider such theories as, you know, as effective field theories, then there may arise some problems, you know, connected with unreticity arguments and so on. However, it is unclear, you know, as far as I understand, these arguments are quite, you know, severe, but it's unclear, for example, if one takes, you know, the gravitational metric to be dynamical and just then average through this, around this metric, then one cannot arrive to such theories. Because the naive argument would be the light cone can fluctuate, you know, and this can change in average of the field causal structure. So this is unclear and an open issue. So how bad are these theories quantum mechanically? So in the sense, if they are, you know, some effective field theories. Because if they do not possess this, or do not correspond to any, you know, normal, newly completed field theory, then we can say, well, one cannot get them as, you know, in this effective prescription. How do we know that the most successful field theories which we have are effective in the sense that we do not go through this average procedure? For example, Landau-Ginzburg theory, you know, corresponds to the atomic physics as a, you know, UV sense. We don't take a field theory as an average then, and, you know, and get to Landau-Ginzburg theory. So it's an effective prescription. And we know a lot of other examples in condensed matter physics where we start from, you know, even finite theories, so something like normal atomic physics, and derive to some effective field theories. And, you know, in that sense, these problems are very involved because they are very, you know, model dependent, if it's not clear. Know what to do with it. Okay, thanks a lot for your attention.
Since you brought up advanced matter physics, I would have disagreed completely with the way you phrased it. That I would have thought that the various continuum limits of the condensed matter system, including magnons and phonons and things, you could think of very much as being what you get in, when you integrate out the short distance degrees of freedom to get some macroscopic picture. And so it very much fits into the effective field theory description. And so that leads to the question, I guess, in the whole quiescence kind of picture, in none of those condensed matter systems do you get an arbitrary function of x dot squared. You're normally thinking in terms of some low energy limit, where if you're going to keep functions of x dot to all orders, you have to also keep the higher derivatives of, you know, x dot dot and x dot 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 and stuff like that. So the DBI actually kind of has a set of words that you know, is aimed at addressing that there's you're sucked towards solutions where the x dot is not small, but x dot dot is small. Is there another example besides the DBI case in where you take a general function of k of x, where you can use the same argument?
Yeah, well, theoretically, I would say if you have slow roll inflation, okay, then automatically in this regime you have the next derivatives which are small.
But the first derivative is not small. So in the first instance,
the first derivative sounded small, but all higher derivatives, so phi 3 dots or whatever, they are small. Okay, so here in this example, it's also the case. So in fact, even more interesting thing. So if you consider this black hole story and take that, you know, our non-linearities are very, very small. So just, I don't know, 1,000th of a percent or something like this. Okay, so it's very, very small non-linearities. It's really something like effective field theory. Even in that case, our sound speed is just a little bit, but larger than one. Okay, now let's take a huge astrophysical black hole. Okay, and in that case, we can send information from a couple of thousands of kilometers from the inside of the horizon. So, because it's an accumulating effect, so to say, you know, in large distances, we will be able to see this. So, and in inflation, in this example, of course, this, you know, these high derivatives are not important. And usually, one should be very, very careful about these high derivatives because, you know, normally, if you take a theory and then, you know, seeing that this theory is fundamental and trying to quantize this theory, and this theory contains high derivatives, that means that we have ghosts in our theory, normally. Only if the theory is very involved, like you know, f of r gravity, then we can, you know, due to some constraints, in fact, we can get rid of these ghosts. In fact, they are not present in the theory. But it is only due to you know, some hidden symmetries, so to say, some constraints and so on. Usually, I would say one should consider the all high derivatives as, you know, as just truncated integral expansion. So in fact, we have some system which is not local in the sense which, you know, in order to describe the evolution, you need the whole past history of this theory, like Lorentz-Dirac equation or so on. But in fact, you should not truncate this at this level of third derivative, but you should consider the whole past theory and integrate it. So your particle will fill the whole past story, you know, which it has. So, and here that's why it's maybe also the case, but you know, it's very, very involved in what concerns high derivatives. So I can say in these two examples, well, if you calculate these high derivatives which may be present on these backgrounds, they are negligibly small. But you know, on other backgrounds, everything is possible, I would expect. But I think it's the same in this in normal DBI case. Because, you know, it's background dependent question.
So you're asking whether there are some other examples of P of X so that the solution is driven to a point where higher derivative terms are like pi squared or negligible naturally.
That's actually two things, I guess, really. One the condensed matter thing was apparently Lorentz arguments are classical, and in the condensed matter, it's not an accident you don't get arbitrary functions of X normally in condensed matter because the quantum corrections, the validity of the classical approximations relying on this effective field theory description. And so then you're forced to be thinking in terms of a low energy limit. But then, as a specific subset of that low energy limit, the question was what you said. Yeah, if you are there other functions, if you put aside the quantum issues and just ask as a self-consistent classic question, what choices of function k of x give me solutions which are driven towards x dot not being small, but x dot dot being small? Those at least have a chance of being
multiple. So DBI is one of them. DBI is another one.
Are those the only two that are known, or is that?
Yeah, I think, by the way, every k inflation has the same property because k inflation is just slow roll inflation, and with slow roll inflation, we should neglect the second derivative for the field phi.
Yeah.
So the first derivative is not small. So it's small, but it's not completely small. It's much higher than the second derivative. So that's why if you do this derivative expansion, then all these high derivatives will be negligible. I would expect.
That motivates looking at the quantum corrections to see if you can really make an honest to God effective theory.
Yeah, well, but quantum correction, so it depends how you calculate them. In fact, if you take just, you know, just fluctuations around this big branch, you will arrive to just, you know, normal, you know, scalar field theory in the sense of condensed metaphysics, because you should just write an action, which is not Lorentz invariant, but Lorentz invariant with new sounds, speed of light, so to say. But you can, of course, quantize it and try to calculate all these diagrams, all these coefficients. But in that case, it may be also ground-dependent equation. How big is this, you know, high derivatives? How big is this? Big as these contributions? I would expect.
Right. But in the quantum case, you would ask for all the backgrounds to give you a sense of the quantum theory.
I don't know whether one can be so far stretched and, you know, require that, you know, for every background this theory is okay, because, you know. We see that for at least for some backgrounds this theory is consistent, but for others, you know, it's maybe a very complicated thing. Maybe it breaks down, you know. We know that GR breaks down if we have, you know, if we are close to the singularity. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.